Greetings once again from Denver, Colorado, the city right here in the middle of it all. You may have heard the news. But stand by now for the Worldview. That's right, it is the Weekly Worldview. I am your host, Doug McBurney. Welcome back to the show where we don't take calls, we don't tolerate sponsors, but we do focus on the events of the week through the lens of original thought. So good to have you aboard. I and my extremely attractive audio engineer are currently recovering from a long night of partying. That's right, it was our 9-year-old daughter, Nicole. Well, it was her 9th birthday yesterday, and so we had a late night camp out sleepover party, and it was all the rage. Now, we managed to secure for our young daughter a trampoline. That's right, a trampoline. Now, the difficult part, well, obviously, we had to go out. We had to get the helmet, mouthpiece, wrist guard, shin guard, knee pads, elbow pads. And if anyone has any advice on trampoline safety, please send it over. Because the children seem to like the trampoline quite a lot. And we got a screaming deal. Our neighbors are moving out, and they had a very small travel trailer, a trailer to load their stuff in as they flee to Omaha. And sitting there in the backyard is this massive, gargantuan trampoline with the big nets on the side. You've seen those? It's like a sealed dome. So we ditched the nets on the side and moved the trampoline onto the McBurney compound in the middle of the night after securing a screaming deal from our neighbors who they couldn't fit the trampoline in their trailer anyways. So it was a big, big fun time. We had a great time. But we are in recovery mode, so you'll have to bear with us. If the show is of relatively shoddy production value, well, you'll know why. Now, there's a number of things in the news that we simply are not going to have time to get to, but I do want to cover them. These are things that are just breaking. Apparently, North Korea has seized a South Korean fishing boat. What's the deal with North Koreans? Are they out of their minds? The people in the North Korean government, are they just crazy? What else? Tiger Woods, his career apparently is over. He's bombed out of a tournament, apparently a golfing tournament. Apparently, he plays golf. What more can you say about that? You know, he ruins his domestic life, and now his career is faltering. A typical pattern that I've seen outlined and lived out in the careers of so many professionals I've worked with over the years, and it's just sad to see. Let's hope that at some point, Tiger Woods has an opportunity to meet Bob Enyart, and Bob might be able to help Tiger. Maybe we should try to arrange that. What else? Anything else that we're not going to have time to get to? There are a number. Oh, well, we'll get to that. Oh, and we will definitely get to that. That's probably it for what we... Oh, what's going on on the scene of the birthers? Well, we don't have time to get into all that. But it's just hilarious how things keep popping up. Inconvenient truths for Barry. And I don't care where he was born, because if he was the right kind of fella, even if he was born in Indonesia, I would support his presidency. And, even if he was born in Chicago, I couldn't support this particular president. And I would want him ousted on any grounds possible. But we don't have time to get into all this fun birther stuff, because there are so many other stories of significant import. The number one story, obviously, being the birthday of little Nicole Michelle McBurney, who 9 years ago yesterday was brought forth upon the earth. And we're very excited about that. And the trampoline, of course. Can't wait to get back to the trampoline. As soon as we finish up, we'll be out getting some exercise on the trampoline. But I want to open with a story from the Justice File, an update to a story that we covered some weeks or months ago from the Reuters Wire. A New Jersey man has been jailed for up to 3 months. He was sentenced last Friday for vomiting on a fellow spectator at a baseball game. You remember that story? Matthew Clemens, 21-year-old ne'er-do-well, has been sent to prison for at least 30 days. He's been given 2 years probation, 50 hours of community service, and he must pay $315 in restitution for vomiting on a female baseball fan. He went ahead and pled guilty in the case in order to avoid who knows what. But the thing that gets me here, 2 years probation, 30 days in jail, 50 hours of community service for puking on another human being. I think, and by the way, he induced the vomiting upon this unfortunate young woman. He induced it himself. And we're not going to tell you how because we don't have any copycat crimes out there. But if you induce vomiting on another human being, I think you need a good beating. I don't think you need community service or prison or probation. You just need a good beating, preferably at the hands of the young woman's father. Now, the $315 in restitution, you know, he probably ruined her clothes, hairdo, and some other, so that may be all well and good. The restitution I'm all for, but I think the young lady's father should be allowed to beat the fellow about the head and neck for some period of time until the father feels that justice has been done, then collect the restitution money and let this ignorant, stupid punk get on with his life instead of sending him to jail and community service. They're making him do good because he is bad, and I don't like that. Just needs a good beating, in my humble opinion, as the father of several daughters. So there you go, the update on perhaps the most important, second or third most important story of the week. But let's move on. Into the politics file, you've heard it, you've seen it, you've heard it talked about. Michelle Obama has gone off to Spain on a lavish holiday, and conservative pundits throughout the punditsphere, I'm not sure how you, the blogosphere. Anyway, you've heard this talked about, the amount of money, the closed beach. What is the story here from the Daily Mail in London? By the way, you have to turn to the foreign press to get any decent coverage of Michelle Obama's lavish vacation there in Spain. But the Daily Mail suggests that, they say that one blogger has gone so far as to brand Michelle Obama as a modern-day Marie Antoinette. And I like that. I'm not sure who the blogger was, but that's pretty good.
She needs to be chopped off.
What's that? No, I don't want to. Let's not go that far. We may have to edit those comments out. You can't say that about Marie Antoinette. I mean the First Lady, Michelle. But folks, you've heard the conservative talk show host talk about her going out and spending all this money in the midst of a recession, and she's got a 40-person, primarily female entourage that has joined her on this lavish vacation. She's meeting with film stars and famous people as she's out on her lavish holiday. But folks, I think everybody is missing nobody's asking the most obvious question about Michelle's vacation out in Spain. Did you know that Barry has been in Chicago this weekend by himself while Michelle takes the girls and the 40 other girls on a trip to Spain? And nobody asked the obvious question. So let me bring it to you. When Barry arrived in Chicago all by himself and was sitting with his buddies, probably smoking a cigarette, maybe drinking cheap wine, chain smoking with his buddies in a cheap motel there in Chicago somewhere, one of his buddies leaned over and said, "Hey, Barry, what's up with Michelle, man? You guys doing all right, man? Because, you know, she all gone off to Spain with all them girls and you all hold up here by yourself, chain-smoking and drinking and..." What? Oh, yeah, that's right. I forgot. Barry doesn't have any black friends. So it would have been, "Gosh, Barry, what's the deal with Michelle going off to Chicago with all those girls? Are you guys doing okay, or have you hit a rough, rocky patch here, Barry?" Yeah. I mean, what's the deal? When your wife bails on your birthday and goes on vacation with 40 other women, it would indicate to me that there's some problems in the relationship. Yeah. Wouldn't you think? I mean, isn't that an obvious question? Has Dr. Laura asked this question? And maybe I'm late to the game here. Maybe she's already asked it. But, you know, so Barry's either, yeah, drinking cheap wine and chain smoking with his buddies in a cheap motel out there in Chicago, or it's possible that he's with his girlfriend. That's the other possibility. Yeah. Now, that's just a, you know, I'm just an observer of human nature, okay? And some observations are more obvious than others, and this one seems glaringly obvious, but nobody seems to want to talk about it. So I will. Well, I should say I have, because I'm done with that story. But seems to me Barry and Michelle aren't doing so well. And, well, that's just sad for their daughters and for them and for the country, because you never know what a politician will do when his personal life starts to fall apart. I mean, it's dangerous, frankly. So, flag the tape. You heard it here first. Actually, second, didn't I do a story about a fairly well-documented affair that Barry was having? And, you know, I've been keeping tabs on Marie Michelle Antoinette there, and she hasn't looked very happy since that story broke. Well, I shouldn't say it broke. It cracked, and then it fell off the face of the earth. A fairly well-documented affair with Barry and some Democratic operative, whatever. Anyway, Michelle doesn't seem too happy these days, and the trip to Spain, to me, is it's a signal. There's a signal there. Okay.
Her arms are still fabulous.
But her arms do look fabulous. I agree. Her arms are fantastic. All right, now let's move on through the politics file. We move from Michelle Marie Antoinette Obama to... Maria. I don't even know her name. I don't pay attention to these people. Elena Kagan. Elena Kagan, according to Reuters, the Democrat-led Senate voted to confirm the former Harvard Law School dean and semi-closeted homosexual activist Elena Kagan to the United States Supreme Court. She will be replacing retiring liberal justice John Paul Stevens. According to Reuters, Kagan is 50 years old and will be the third woman on the current Supreme Court, unless, of course, she decides to undergo that long-anticipated sex change operation and become the seventh man on the Supreme Court. By the way, five Republicans voted yes for Kagan, and you know who they are. I don't have to tell you who they are. They're the usual suspects. The Republicans that the only thing that could make me sicker than looking at Elena Kagan is looking at John McCain and the other spineless wonders who voted yes for Elena Kagan. It's just disgusting. It's just sad where we've gotten to. And if you think that's bad, we'll move from one relatively disgusting story to another. It's from The Sun over in London. There is a Brazilian model. The Sun calls her a Brazilian bombshell. Her name is Leah T. And she is the new Givenchy star in its ad campaigns. Are you familiar with Givenchy? G-I-V-E-N-C-H-Y? Any idea?
Givenchy.
Givenchy? I could be pronouncing it wrong because I'm not too familiar with fashion and things like that. Well, how do the Japanese pronounce it?
Givenchy.
Givenchy. So it's probably Givenchy or Givenchy. Anyways... they've got a new model, a super bombshell from Brazil, who's appearing in their campaign ads. They say she's a leggy brunette. She's soon going to appear in Italian Vanity Fair and has posed for French Vogue. And bombshell Leah T. She apparently used to be a man.
No.
Yeah, I'm not making that up. She used to be a man. She is currently undergoing hormone replacement therapy before undergoing a long-anticipated sex change operation. So she says she's been shunned by her strict Catholic family, including her dad, who is a famous Brazilian football star. Can you imagine the torture for this poor fella? I mean, he's a famous sports figure in Brazil, and his son ends up... Wait a second. Is it his son? No. His son ends up becoming a bombshell female model, and that's got to be difficult. She says her father doesn't even like to touch on this matter, which I know. You just don't even want to comment on that. But she said she remains positive, saying her choice or his choice, its choice, is between being, quote, unhappy forever or trying to be happy. So he, she, it is trying to be happy by surgically altering certain portions of her body, which... oh, my goodness. Da Vinci, however you pronounce it, their creative director there at the corporation says that Leah, the bombshell, is a true goddess, he says. So she says she's going to be happy, or she's trying to be happy. The people at Givenchy or Givenchy, they think that she's a true goddess. But didn't somebody write a song about this? So I've had to actually put the story in front of my extremely attractive audio engineer to assure her that I did not just make up that story just to set up that song for entertainment purposes. No, it's a real true story. And you shouldn't be surprised because the deviants are gaining ground on all fronts, it would seem. We'll go, in fact, to the San Francisco Chronicle, where you can always count on news about the deviant set. Chief U.S. District Judge and semi-open homosexual Vaughn Walker has ruled against California's Proposition 8 in what we have dubbed here at the Weekly Worldview, basically the equivalent of the Scopes Monkey Trial regarding, well, let's just call it deviant destructive sexual behavior. And it's been now deemed to be productive and good by, imagine that, a homosexual judge out in California. Shock of all shocks. According to the San Francisco Chronicle, backers of the marriage ban, Proposition 8, said they were confident they would prevail in the end and predicted that Judge Walker's decision would energize people who believe marriage should be reserved for one man and one woman, just as the ban had mobilized gay rights opponents. Well, let's hope that's true. Let's hope in 2010 this is just another nail in the coffin of liberalism. What are the odds of that, you think? I just don't know. What else do we have here? Oh, Proposition 8 was approved, you'll remember, by 52% of California voters. Now, get that, ladies and gentlemen. Only 52%, barely over half of California voters, voted to protect marriage from the clutches of the deviants and the perverts. So I don't think that even if they're motivated, there's much they can do. It seems to me that the homosexuals have taken over California. I mean, it's basically Gomorrah West out in California, and that's just sad because it's such a pretty place. It's lovely. Let's see here. Oh, at a news conference just after homosexual Judge Walker's decision was released, lesbian plaintiff Chris Perry said, "Today every American should be proud." She said, "For so long, Sandy and I and our family have been regarded as less than. We've been regarded as unequal and not worthy of liberty and the pursuit of happiness under the law. But this decision says that we are Americans too. We too should be treated equally. Our family is just as loving, just as real, and just as valid as everyone else's," unquote. That's from Chris Perry, one of the deviant plaintiffs in the case that was brought before the homosexual judge in the Scopes Monk Gay trial. And just as predicted here, bold prediction I made months ago, although it wasn't a bold prediction. It was fairly mundane and obvious prediction, pointing out the obvious. The homosexuals won the Monk Gay trial. And by the way, to all of you so-called conservative leaders, and I love you all, but wasn't it the conservatives back in the early 90s who said that homosexuals should have equal rights and not special rights? And now they're fighting for equal rights, just like you said they should have, and so now they threaten marriage. They threaten to turn marriage into more of a joke than it actually has become among the heterosexual set here in the United States circa 2010. It's just embarrassing what's happened to marriage. And it's just sad. But we are not surprised at the ruling there in California, but we are distressed by it. We are distressed. That's the state of justice, right? When a homosexual judge gets to rule on a trial over whether or not homosexuals can allegedly get married, that's the state of justice. And it shouldn't surprise you. Listen to the state of criminal justice. Let's go to the justice file. From Houston, Texas, the Associated Press, Chanton Jenkins, a 34-year-old man, was sentenced to 30 years in prison for the drunk driving deaths of five children, including three of his own children and two other children, friends of his kids. He's gotten 30 years for killing five children. 30 years. Five children. What does he have to say for himself? He said at the sentencing, he said, "I failed as a father. I couldn't protect them. I couldn't save them. I would remind Mr. Jenkins that you killed them. It wasn't that you couldn't protect them or couldn't save them. It's that you put them in danger and you killed them." For which, obviously, Mr. Jenkins should sacrifice his own life, and perhaps that would help him see the error of his ways, because here he is sentenced to 30 years, and he just thinks he failed to protect his kids and failed to save them. He doesn't yet comprehend fully that he murdered them. But if the judge said, in 3 days, you are going to be executed and you're going to meet your creator, think about that. Perhaps Mr. Jenkins would come around, but now he'll languish in prison for 10 or 15 years, become a hardened criminal, and then be released upon society. Another bold prediction from the Weekly Worldview. He will be eligible for parole in 15 years after killing five children. Now, Jenkins, of course, according to the AP story, denied that he was intoxicated at the time of the accident. His attorney says that Jenkins just pleaded guilty to spare his family from having to go through a trial, but I wasn't drinking at the time. I wasn't drinking. No, I wasn't drunk. I might have been drinking, all right, but I wasn't drunk. But in fact, tests showed Jenkins had a blood alcohol level of 0.12%, which is pretty darn drunk and worthy of a murder charge and an execution. But that's the state of justice. I mean, we've got homosexuals ruling that men can marry sheep, or, well, I guess they haven't ruled that men can marry sheep yet. A few more cases. Let us allow our judicial system to build up some case law on that, and pretty soon it'll be one man and one fish, one man and one sheep. Two men and three schnauzers. It could be anything at this point. They're all equal. They're all valid.
Remember fish attacks.
Oh, yeah, fish. Maybe not fish. Yeah, we saw that show last night, When Fish Attack. You know, you see that when you're scanning through and you see When Fish Attack and you think, well, I got to see this. Because you don't normally think of fish attacking. And then you turn on the show and you're like, oh, yeah, sharks. Sharks are fish. Anyway, how do we get off on that? What was I talking about? Oh, no, that was a serious story. But we can't get too depressed about it, or we'd want to flee the country, and there's frankly nowhere to go. So we have to do the best with what we've got here. And liberals are trying to do their best. In fact, in Paterson, New Jersey, this past week, according to Fox TV in New York, out in Paterson, New Jersey, a man attending a block party as part of the National Night Out Anti-Crime, Anti-Violence Initiative, he was shot and killed. At the event, the anti-violence event there in Paterson, New Jersey, 39-year-old Robert Godfrey was shot in the head while arguing at the Anti-Crime, Anti-Violence Initiative event He was arguing with another man. The other man shot him in the head. Obviously, we didn't get this fellow's total buy-in on the anti-violence event, this one particular fellow. The shooting did happen in front of a large crowd of people. National Night Out, by the way, according to Fox, is observed across the U.S. as an annual event meant to heighten drug and crime prevention awareness. And this is the 27th annual Night Out Against Crime. At which point, the leaders of this outreach might want to just look at, I mean, for 27 years you've been trying this, you got people shooting other people in the head. Maybe it's not working. Maybe it's not working. That's awful in Paterson, New Jersey. Now here we go into the domestic tranquility file. Listen to this. Now this is just creepy, okay? From Bartow, Florida, authorities there have a man in custody. They say he stabbed his friend to death and then drank his blood. Now, how do they assume that this guy was a friend? I mean, typically you don't even stab a friend, let alone drink his blood. But let's look into the story. When I first read this story, I saw the word friend and I thought there's probably some sort of sexual immorality involved here. That was just my gut. Well, we read on. Police say they believe that Mauricio Mendez Lopez stabbed Macario Cruz to death because he was having an affair with Lopez's sister-in-law. Uh-huh. Not a big shock there. A police report shows the men had an argument in which Lopez struck Cruz in the face with a 15-pound dumbbell. Now, that's not something you do to your friend. Unless he's threatening your sister's marriage by, you know. Then the barbells can fly. The dumbbells fly. And let's see. The brother of the offended woman then allegedly threatened to kill them both unless the relationship ended. So a lot of anger. As well there should be over one man threatening another man's sister's marriage. Lopez then returned and stabbed Cruz to death, and then he left the property with a cup in his hand, and one of the women at the party said he drank from the cup in a strange ritual from their native Mexico. I didn't know they had that down in Mexico. But that's another good reason to maybe take a look at who's coming over the border. I mean, if they have rituals of drinking human blood, maybe we'd want to screen those out. I mean, maybe. Isn't it worth at least setting up a mechanism by which we might try to screen out the blood drinkers? And the murderers. And the adulterers. Oh, that's right. Adultery is not a crime in America. At least not officially. It is a crime. It is a sin. But we don't officially recognize the crime. And so in our tolerance for adultery, we visit murder upon families. Because people become incensed and outraged when adultery takes place, and as well they should, and they have no place to put their anger. They can't call the cops and say, hey, this guy is cheating with my sister and is threatening her marriage. No, they can't call the cops, and so they freak out, and this type of thing happens. By the way, all the adults in the home are illegal immigrants, and typically blood drinkers are illegal immigrants. At least so far. Although I haven't been to a rave party in San Francisco recently, and you never know what goes on there. Let's move on. But I apologize, but it's more domestic tranquility news. Manchester, Connecticut, you all heard about this. I'm sure Omar Thornton killed 8 people last Tuesday at a beer distributorship there in Manchester, Connecticut. Thornton had been caught on videotape stealing beer, and apparently he had a little racket going. He was stealing beer and selling it to a third party. But, of course, his family claims that it's a racial incident. He had complained of racial harassment. So, obviously, he was accused of stealing beer because he was black. And also, he appeared on that videotape stealing beer. That's fairly well documented. But, obviously, we know this happened because he was black. Welcome to post-racial America. under President Barry Ho and Michelle Marie Antoinette Obama. The killer in this case was alive when police got to the scene, but killed himself before officers got to him. So that was a workplace shooting, they call it now. They call them a workplace shootings. In fact, I've got a list from the Associated Press of some, just some, of the fatal shootings at U.S. workplaces in the last few years. And the list is so voluminous that I do not have time. I simply can't. I couldn't do it. I will put a link on the blog to this list of workplace shootings. And it is shocking, the frequency and the intensity of workplace murder is what it is. It's not just shootings, because, see, these shootings result in the death of other people. And those used to be called murders before journalists took over the lexicon, and they just now call them fatal shootings. But it's a long list. I'll put a link to it on the blog. You can read it if you want to be depressed. Help yourself, because it is depressing. You know, you wonder, why is it that in days past, when people got fired or they got caught stealing and were asked to resign, why is it back in, you know, let's say 50 years ago when guns were a lot more prevalent among law-abiding citizens, why is it that people didn't shoot their bosses back in the 50s and 60s? Why is that? What has changed in our nation that allows people to even consider the idea that if my boss fires me or accuses me of something, that I could even think about taking out a gun and shooting everyone in the room? I mean, what is it that has changed? Something has definitely changed. Is it just that we have more people? I hear some liberals say, well, you know, with this population, you have to expect a certain number of this and that and crazies and psychos. I don't think it's that we have more people. After all, we've trimmed the population by 70 million over the past 40 years through the killing of innocent unborn children. We've trimmed the population by some 70 million people when you count the people killed and the kids they would have had and the kids that they might have had by now. Tens of millions fewer in population. But the problem goes back to justice. And it's a matter of tolerating deviancy, which turns into tolerating criminal behavior, which eventually turns into tolerating murder, and now has come to fruition in tolerating murder and suicide. And therein lies the problem. Forgotten what justice is, and we've allowed our elected officials and the people they appoint to forget what justice is, and it only takes one generation of forgetting those type of things until society devolves, the country collapses, and another nation moves in to fill the void. Not to depress you too much, but it's been about a generation since we started forgetting those things. All right, now let's move on. Speaking of another nation stepping in to fill in the void, from Phoenix, Arizona, from Fox TV there, a Mexican drug cartel is offering a $1 million reward for Sheriff Joe Arpaio's head. Yes, you heard that right, his head. They're also offering $10,000 for anyone who wants to join the Mexican drug cartel. Yeah. So Judge Arpaio, I read this story and I'm thinking, even if I don't know Judge, I'm sorry, Judge, that's an insult. I apologize, Mr. Arpaio. Certainly don't want to associate you with any of those. Sheriff, now even if I don't know Sheriff Joe Arpaio, I read this story and I think, I like this guy. I like Joe Arpaio. I want to be like Joe. Because there's a $1 million reward on his head from murderous drug cartels down in Mexico. He must be a pretty good guy. Now, I do know a bit about Judge Arpaio, as I'm sure you do. Judge Arpaio is an example of a poor fella doing the best he can with what he's got. He's got a justice system that is just broken and collapsed and basically a joke. And Joe Arpaio is just doing his dead level best to make it work. And we honor Sheriff Joe Arpaio. And, this has got to be a little bit scary for him. I guess he's received death threats before, but this is a little bit more serious in that a message has been circulated in a fairly sophisticated manner to get the word out to dirtbags and scum who are out there to be lying in wait for Sheriff Joe Arpaio. Lisa Allen of the Sheriff's Office says they believe the message did indeed originate in Mexico. But she says what really concerns investigators is how quickly the message may have been spread. She says it's going in so many different places that our folks are looking at it and thinking, well, at any given point in time, it could land in front of some crazy person who thinks, I can do that. I can collect that $1 million. I'll take out Joe Arpaio. Yeah. Well, I don't think it'll be a crazy person that tries to take out Joe Arpaio, because I have a feeling that if a crazy person or a semi-deranged moron got anywhere near Joe Arpaio and tried to threaten him, that Joe would fill him full of lead. I don't think there's too many people who could take out Joe Arpaio. It's going to take more than a crazy person. It's going to take, you know, like a hired assassin for a Mexican drug cartel. I wouldn't be worried about the crazy people. I'd be worried about the very sane professional killers that might take advantage of this. Because when it comes to all the other losers and nut jobs, Joe can do just fine. But it's scary what's happening there on the border. And you know what it is, folks? It comes back to tolerance. It comes back to a decision somewhere in our past to tolerate drug dealers. Now, I've had this conversation with a number of conservative friends of mine and libertarians in particular who say, Doug, you know, we should just scrap these drug laws. You know, there was a time when we had no drug laws and things were fine. And, I remind them that things weren't fine. You know, that opium ravaged China in the late 19th century and cocaine and opium and all manner of other drugs were huge problems at the beginning of this century before our government was forced by Christians to make these drugs illegal. And for those of you who think that we don't need drug laws or that we should repeal drug laws and just make it legal and let the idiots die who are so stupid that they do drugs, that's just a completely unbiblical perspective. And let me tell you why. Paul tells us that the law came to make, he said, sin was sin and it was bad and it was killing me. But the law came and made sin exceedingly sinful. See, the purpose of the law is to make sin exceedingly sinful so that the people who are engaging in reckless, destructive behavior, once they realize how seriously destructive that behavior is, they're much more likely to consider not doing it. Because if you're just wandering around in ignorance, committing destructive behavior like heroin and cocaine and marijuana, well, you can wander around in that blissful idiocy until you kill yourself and hurt other people. But when the law comes, it makes sin exceedingly sinful. And we realize the destructive nature of bad behavior. So that's why we need to keep the drug laws. Drugs need to be illegal. And I could give you a whole list, okay, if you want to get specific. Because the children need to know that sin is exceedingly sinful. And intoxicating yourself intoxicating yourself is a sin. I mean, we could probably agree on that, right? Even you libertarians. Well, wait a minute. Libertarians. I don't think libertarians believe in sin. Anyway, but my Christian friends who may think that the drug laws are extraneous and counterproductive, I would argue biblically that that is an incorrect view, and you should consider it from a biblical perspective, as we often do here on the Weekly Worldview. All right, now, by the way, you can find that, I quoted a little bit of the Apostle Paul, you can find that in the book of Romans. I'm not going to give you chapter and verse because I think you need to read the whole book. It's a good book. All right, let's move on. Let's hope Sheriff Joe Arpaio isn't taken out by Mexican drug lords and their hired assassins. Man, Joe is a man. I mean, that is a man's man down there. You got to respect what Joe is trying to do down there. All right, now let's move on to some economic news. Now, we all know that the Barry Ho administration and the stone Marxists he surrounded himself with have undertaken to fundamentally transform the country, and indeed they've done it. They've taken over the healthcare system. They've taken over a good portion of the auto industry, a good portion of the banking industry, the student loan industry. And here's what we can look forward to. According to the United States Post Office, revenues are down. They lost $3.5 billion. Wow. In the last quarter. I thought that was for the year. Anyway, so they lost $3.5 billion. This is interesting. There's been an unprecedented decline in mail volume, down more than 20% since 2007. We had some kids over here to the house for the party. Great kids, homeschooled Christian kids. I mean, it was a great time. But these kids have these gadgets, an iPod, and they're texting each other. And I'm thinking, what are the odds that at any time in the future, these kids are going to send a letter to one another when they can just immediately say, hey, how you doing? Hey, I'm doing fine. Let's go jump on the trampoline. And they're 8 feet apart. But, you know, when they go back across town to home, they can still do this. And I just can't help but think that if Ben Franklin had been at Nicole's birthday party yesterday and looked around at what the kids were doing, sending instantaneous messages to one another, that he would laugh at the idea that we still have a post office. And now Ben Franklin, he founded the post office and probably has some emotional investment in it, but he would have to look around at the kids and say, what are you doing? You're losing $3.5 billion a quarter. No kidding. I mean, come on. Apparently, now let's get back to the story here. This is from CNN. The problem at the post office is exacerbated because the post office has been required to pay $5 billion plus into its prepaid retiree health benefits. So, folks, you know, the fact that the unions and the government have promised these outlandishly extravagant retirement packages, well, that's just not going to end well. And I think that's going to be the civil crisis. One of several civil crises that fracture the nation within the next decade or two. You're going to have all these old people retiring, having been told they could have 90% of their pay. And it's sad to say, but the fracturing of a nation rarely comes down to moral issues. It comes down to money. And it's sad, but true. It's human nature. I mean, the fight over slavery that led to the Civil War was basically the Union simply not willing to allow the South to secede for economic reasons. It was because if you read the Constitution, it seems like a state should be allowed to secede if the government becomes tyrannical. And even if the government is not tyrannical, it seems that a state should be allowed to secede. So back before the Civil War, we had an evil bunch of southern states who were slaveholders who wanted to secede. And the North, instead of saying, okay, fine, secede, wither on the vine, And come back and see us in 15 years when we have to be sending you basic food staples because your economy will collapse without us. Instead of doing that, we had a bloody civil war, and it came down to money. It wasn't necessarily morality. It was money. Well, I predict that this coming crisis in retirement packages and benefits for all these people who thought they could work 20, 25 years and then live in the lap of luxury for the rest of their lives, that's going to be a problem, a big money problem. Then, of course, there's the inevitable economic collapse that the Marxists are putting upon us. That's going to be a big problem. And then there's going to be the idea that certain states are simply not going to tolerate the federal mandates anymore. The federal mandate that we buy your health care, the federal mandate that we send you all this money that you're stealing from us, the federal mandate that we must allow the killing of unborn children in our state. As states start to wake up and vote against these mandates and stand up to the federal government and say no more, this is where we draw the line, at some point, at least one state is going to have to follow through and say this far and no further, and we are out of here. And at that point, you've got to hope that we have someone benevolent in the White House and that it doesn't devolve into civil war. Anyway, let's replace that ugly, ugly thought with the thought of Ben Franklin sitting amidst a bunch of nine-year-olds texting each other on their iPods and just chuckling as he looks up at the TV commercial with the USPS logo. That's a much happier thought. Let's end it. Well, we can't end on that. I've got another bit of disturbing news. Social Security, according to the Washington Times, Social Security will pay out more this year than it gets in payroll taxes, marking the first time since the program, marking the first time the program will be in the red since it was overhauled back in 1983. And if you believe that, I've got a postal service I'd like to sell you. If you believe that this is the first time Social Security's been in the red since 1983, well, you just haven't been paying attention. You may not be qualified to listen to this show. I would ask you to turn it off and move on to something else. Social Security's been in the red, ever since I was born. But that's if you're into, you know, math, which apparently is not necessary to be an administrator in the federal government these days. All right, and more bad news from East St. Louis, from the Politics File. This is from St. Louis Today. East St. Louis is being forced to shrink their police department by almost 30%. The mayor says they're going to lay off 37 employees, including 19 of their 62 police officers. They're also going to lay off 11 firefighters. So here you've got East St. Louis, which, I mean, if you've been paying attention to anything, you know that East St. Louis is basically Beirut West. It's a war zone in East St. Louis. But because of budget constraints, they're going to lay off police, firefighters. It's shocking. The mayor has the nerve to say that a weak economy has robbed the city of badly needed money. Can you believe? And he says this with a straight face. He's part of the Democrat machine that's been running St. Louis. I shouldn't say Democrat because it doesn't really matter. He's part of the liberal communist pinko criminal regime that's been running St. Louis for the better part of 40 years. And he has the nerve to say that it's a weak economy that has robbed the city? Sir, it's you. It's you and the politicians like you who have robbed East St. Louis. And it's you who should be fired, not the police and not the firefighters. I'm Doug McBurney, and this is the Weekly Worldview. So glad to have you with us as we round third. What did he say? Anyway, as we round third and we head for home here in the Weekly Worldview, I've got a story here that's from the duh file. Or maybe you could call it the no kidding file. Or obviously, the obviously file. The story from USA Today, BP may drill again in the same undersea oil reservoir that's led to the leak in the Gulf of Mexico. I read that headline and I said, duh. I mean, we've got some pretty good evidence that there's a lot of oil and gas down there. I mean, if there's an executive at BP who's thinking we shouldn't drill there, he should be fired. He's a moron. They say they're going to think about what to do, the folks there at BP. their chief operating officer says, we're going to have to think about what to do. And this is what gets me. Apparently right now, if you've been watching the news, BP plans to use a relief well to push mud and cement into the underground reservoir. I'm watching that on the news, and now I'm not an oil executive. I'm no oil expert. But I'm thinking, why don't you use the relief well to suck out all that oil? Hello? Why? You're drilling another hole into the reservoir, and then you're... I mean, just... how about hook a hose to that cap and just start sucking out the oil? I don't even think you have to suck it out, right? Pretty much wants to come out. I just don't understand. You know, but political correctness can lead to economically foolish decisions. And BP there could be serious political pressure for BP to abandon this well just because it's such a bad well. It's bad. It leaked all that oil. It soiled all those birds. It's terrible. We can't drill that well. It's a bad well. Anyway, I say drill, but I mean, it doesn't take a genius to realize that. All right. More bad news from the war file. Iranian President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad survived an attack with a homemade explosive device on his motorcade during a visit to some city there in Iran that nobody cares about. Let's see. Now, he claims it was just fireworks, and people were celebrating his arrival. His office has said we believe it was celebratory fireworks as our dear leader came through. That's what they said a day later. But immediately after the attack, Ahmadinejad was quoting as saying, "These stupid Zionists have hired mercenaries to assassinate me." And you just gotta hope that's not true. You've gotta hope that if the Zionists actually hired mercenaries to assassinate Ahmadinejad, that they could get the job done. We gotta hope that this is just some random bomb thrower, and that the Jews have the real capable mercenaries still in waiting for their assignment. All right, let's hope so. So the nature of our enemy, one of the problems with the war is that we've failed to understand the nature of our enemy, and we want to build bridges, and we want to be friends, and we want to honor the religion of peace, and we want to even let them build a mosque at Ground Zero, just like they did on the Temple Mount there in Israel. If anyone's been paying attention to anything, the Muslims have a tendency to build mosques wherever they have achieved a victory and defeated their enemies. And if you've been paying attention. If not, if you haven't been paying attention, let me help you by giving you some information on the nature of our enemy from Kabul, Afghanistan, from the Associated Press. 10 members of a medical team, including 6 Americans, have been shot and killed by Islamic militants as they were returning from providing eye treatment and other health care in remote villages in northern Afghanistan. Dirk Franz is director of the International Assistance Mission. The team made a 3-week trip to Nuristan province in Afghanistan. They drove and then hiked for hours with pack horses over mountainous terrain to reach the Puran Valley to give eye treatments and medical care to the poor peasants of Afghanistan who've been oppressed by warlords and Muslims for 1,000 years. Well, Taliban spokesman there in Afghanistan, his name is Zabiullah Mujahid. He told the Associated Press that the Taliban killed the foreigners because they were spying for the Americans and preaching Christianity. So 10 members of a medical team have been butchered by our enemy for preaching Christianity. And, spying. The main thing is preaching Christianity. And doing good. You see, anyone who does good and reflects the nature of Jesus Christ to these people is an enemy. And all of you out there who want to build bridges to the Muslims, as soon as you cross that bridge and go to hug them, they will chop your head off. Ignorant fool. All right, from the culture file, Christopher Hitchens has been diagnosed with cancer. That's right, Christopher Hitchens, author of the book God Is Not Great, which shortly after receiving one of his royalty checks for that book, also received a diagnosis of terminal cancer. He's got 3 to 6 months to live, and I must say he wrote a fairly interesting piece. I forget what magazine he writes for, but he wrote a fairly interesting piece. Listen to this line from Christopher Hitchens. Now, an atheist, no doubt, but a talented writer, you just can't deny. He says Christopher Hitchens, I have more than once in my life woken up feeling like death, but nothing prepared me for the early morning last June when I came to consciousness feeling as if I were actually shackled to my own corpse. Wow. It's amazing how atheists stumble over the truth. You are indeed shackled to your own corpse, Mr. Hitchens, and I've rarely heard it put more appropriately and more succinctly than that. He feels now he's shackled to his own corpse. He says, in whatever kind of race life may be, I have very abruptly become a finalist. Wow, man, good writing. It's a shame that a fellow who is this talented at communications has missed the big picture, the one biggest fact in the universe, that he is indeed a creature created by a living God, and that he will face that God and have a choice as to whether or not to dwell with that creator for eternity or to dwell apart from him. Christopher Hitchens has missed all that. So there are a number of Christian groups around the country organizing prayer vigils for Christopher Hitchens. And I think this is laudable and appropriate, and I will pray for Mr. Hitchens. Because I would love for Mr. Hitchens to be in heaven for eternity and reading the stuff he writes because he's very talented. But as of right now, I saw him in an interview on Anderson Cooper last week, and I'll report that to you since I know nobody saw it because it was on Anderson Cooper. He was in an interview with Anderson Cooper, and he basically told Anderson, look, if you hear of a deathbed confession, he said, rest assured I was delirious either from pain or from drugs. He said, never in my right mind would I ever acknowledge that there is a Lord over me. May he didn't say those exact words, but that's exactly what he said. So we'll keep an eye on Chris, and we'll keep praying for him. I've got to get a message to my pastor to see if we could organize. Maybe we could organize the church to actually pray publicly for Christopher Hitchens to repent. All right, more from the culture file. I've got to go quickly here, folks. I'm almost out of time. From Rockford, Michigan, Jerry Duthette, 48 years old, woke up from a drunken stupor one Saturday night in late July to find that his Jack Russell Terrier Kiko had gnawed off his right big toe. Yeah. Now his wife, who's a registered nurse, had been urging him for weeks to have his infected toe examined by a doctor. And him and the wife went out, they partied, he drank extensively, he passed out, and the dog chewed off his infected toe. And apparently it was enough to wake him up. Man, that's a lot of drinking if the dog gets through the whole toe before you wake up, man. The couple said they were amazed that their dog appeared to know Duthette had an infection that needed treatment. Wow. So, you know, either the dog is, you know, like a wonder dog, or the toe smelled like rancid garbage, and the dog just did what dogs do and ate it. Anyway, I don't know why I put that story in here, but it was just one of those things you kind of have to talk about. Okay, let's go to the personhood file. Quickly, I want to do a letter to the editor, to the Morgan County Citizen there in Madison, Georgia. Barry Laurie writes, he says, in vitro fertilization is a very expensive procedure. Last week, Paul Brown, politician, responded to my letter stating that his Sanctity of Human Life Act would not outlaw in vitro fertilization. Well, Paul Brown, the politician, is correct. The Sanctity of Human Life Act will not outlaw in vitro fertilization as long as doctors only fertilize the number of eggs that the couple wants implanted. The bill states in Section 2 that the life of each human being begins with fertilization, even in the laboratory, and goes on to say that each fertilized egg has all... Wait a minute, it doesn't say fertilized egg. That's what this liberal letter to the editor guy says. Anyway, it says that each embryo has all the legal and constitutional attributes and privileges of personhood. Conception, says the writer, is the act of becoming pregnant. And the writer says a fertilized egg must attach to the uterine wall and live in order for a person to be pregnant. Now, that's just a lie. That's number two. That's strike two, fertilized egg. And then he says, okay, he says, if the Sanctity of Human Life Act passes, there'll be no more fertilizing or implanting multiple eggs to compensate for the high failure rate. There may not be any more freezing and storing of fertilized eggs. Well, there's strike three. You could still freeze them and store them and then FedEx them across the country and someone could adopt them. He says fertilization laboratories, will they have to have law enforcement on staff to make sure no fertilized eggs are destroyed? Well, let me ask you this, you moron. Are police on staff in every home and every business in the country to make sure no one's murdered? No, they're not. So they're not going to be at the in vitro clinics either. That's strike four, and so he's out of here. He's out of here. He says that, he concludes that he's pro-life, this letter to the editor writer. He says, I'm pro-life, but I'm also for the less fortunate who want a child of their own flesh and blood through in vitro. And I would say to you, you stupid moron from Madison, Georgia, that you may underestimate the compassion of the Christian community in this nation and our ability to support the efforts of people who want to have children and to make sure that even in light of personhood legislation and the changing of the law, that we would find a way for people to have more kids, because we like kids. Now, we don't like you, but we like kids. All right, let's move on. We've got one more story of dramatic importance. Donna Shalala, former Health and Human Services Secretary Donna Shalala, was on her way back to the U.S. from Israel, and she was detained and subjected to a humiliating security debriefing and invasive personal questions because her last name is Shalala and she's of Lebanese descent, so the Israeli security forces detained her. It's hilarious. A lifetime bureaucrat being harassed by fellow lifetime bureaucrats there at the airport. But hey, when you have a passenger claiming to be an old woman, but she looks convincingly like an old man, or possibly some troll-like creature from another planet, you've got to stop and investigate. And besides, it's a fact that if you exhumed Yasser Arafat's body today, it would definitely resemble Donna Shalala. So the Israeli security forces were just doing their job. My, we went a little long. I apologize. This is Doug McBurney signing off from the Weekly Worldview. I'll be back with you next week. I want to thank KGov, and I want to thank my other brother, Daryl, who makes it all happen here in the Weekly Worldview studios. And until we meet again, may the grace of God go with you, and may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.